Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A good portion of this program, folks, will be taken up by one simple question, and that is, are WWE fans overexpecting when it comes to this brand new supposed Triple H era of the WWE? We're also going to be talking a little bit about the CM Punk situation. And if Triple H was right years ago in some of the things he said about CM Punk, because it certainly is aging well, and a little bit of Clash at the Castle and SmackDown talk. But let's start first with the CM Punk situation. Because there are people out there saying this is really a work. And some of the things he said about Hangman Page was really just a work. But from the sources I have, I'm told that Hangman Page knew nothing about this. It was not cleared with Tony Khan in any way, shape, or form. And they felt that this was CM Punk's receipt for Hangman Page supposedly going off script when they were having a feud and saying some things that stuck in CM Punk's craw that he later complained to Tony Khan about. Look, folks, it's fine to be a fan. It's fine to be a CM Punk fan. I never was, but it's fine to be one. But reality is reality. And the reality of the situation is CM Punk only loves wrestling when CM Punk can control all the aspects of who he's wrestling for. Now, that would be the same thing as you going into your job and saying to your boss, you're running your business wrong. The way you need to run your business is I need to manage it, do exactly what I want to do and nothing that I do not want to do, when I want to do it for the amount of money I want to get paid. And see how quickly you're shown the door. Because real life don't work that way. The idea of CM Punk's Perfect Wrestling Federation is CM Punk is the top guy. He gets to pick and choose who he wins and who he loses to, pick and choose what he wants to do, when he wants to do it, if he wants to do it. And I suppose anybody could be happy under those circumstances. You see, it takes a real student of the wrestling game to be able to step back and say, I may not be the top guy. I may be in the middle of the pack, but this place is running really well, and this is really cranking on all cylinders. And not be so egotistical that you can't see the forest for the trees and say, unless I'm the top guy, there's no way this federation is functioning well. That's always been CM Punk's attitude. But when we get to the point where you start taking shots that are, there's no way to retaliate, it starts to be poison in the dressing room, and here's why. Let's just say I'm in a dressing room of my old federation, okay, the federation I worked for. And I found out that the guy I'm going to wrestle in one of our bigger cards in 3 weeks just got divorced. And I go out to that ring, and he says, yeah, you're not half the man you think you are, and I'm going to prove to the world that you're a phony and blah, 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 blah. That's fair game. And then I go out and say, yeah, well, listen, if you can't even hang on to your wife, and she was average at best, then I don't think you should be talking about who a man is and who a man isn't, because, you know, there are people out there that probably could hang on to your wife a hell of a lot longer than you did. and I didn't clear that with him, how do you think he feels about me? Think he wants to work with me? Or do you think he wants to punch me in the face for real? You think he wants to keep me safe? Or you think he says, okay, now you put my personal life into something that really was not necessary? There's a bridge you don't cross. There's certain things you don't say. And if you are going to, then you've got to go to the person and say, how sensitive do you feel about this? I remember an incident where I was going to say some derogatory things about a wrestler's sister, his real-life sister. And she was going to be a part of the show in a small way. And I said, as my character, I probably would do that. I probably would say that. And even though this person was my friend, and I didn't necessarily think they would get terribly upset, and by the way, his sister was my friend too, I told both of them, are you okay with this? Because this is what I'm going to say. And if there's any part of it you're not okay, then, you know, we'll take it out. We'll do something else. That's respect. Now, if I just went out there and said, blah, 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 I could expect him to say, okay, well, that's unnecessary and I'm cold for it. See, but the problem is CM Punk has convinced everyone, I deliver the pipe bombs, when in reality, 90% of the pipe bomb was scripted and ran through in WWE, 90% of that. And, oh, I'm very, open on the mic and I'll say whatever. But if someone wants to say something back and they use his own philosophy of I'll say anything and I won't even check with you, then he runs to management and says, Adam Page said bad things about me and I'm very upset and I refuse to lose to him now. That's your hero. So CM Punk is only effective if he says, I get to say whatever I want. You have to be scripted and I have to approve what you say. I get to choose whether I win or lose. And if I decide I don't like you or some of the things you said, I'll just say I refuse to lose to him. Who wouldn't be happy in that position? But that's not good for a wrestling federation. We were always, at least in the wrestling federations I worked for, we were always told the guy who's losing every week is just as important as the guy who's winning every week. Because without the guy who's losing every week, there is no top guy. Those guys who lose every single week say, I ain't doing that. Why should I come here, bust my ass, and never win? Why should I do that? What's in it for me? But they did. And because they did, there were people who were thought of as, well, these are top guys. Without those people, you don't get top guys. So if everyone had CM Punk's philosophy and just simply said, I'm not losing, then where's CM Punk? All the people who lost to CM Punk could have easily said, I'm not losing to him. I refuse to lose to him. And then where's CM Punk? But when CM Punk says it, it's, well, that's my right. When CM Punk says I refuse to have a match with Triple H because he said bad things about me, that's my right. However, I can say all kinds of bad things about Stephanie McMahon, Triple H, Vince McMahon, and you should just take it as, well, that's wrestling hype. But when someone says something back, CM Punk does not take that as wrestling hype. He takes that personally and says, no, I'm not losing to them now. That's ludicrous. It's a ludicrous individual. If you get to hold all the cards, then I'm sure you're going to win any card game that you decide to play. And that's what CM Punk has done for the greater part of his career. He's worked his way into a position where he gets to hold all the cards. And when he's put in a position where you say, you're not going to hold all the cards, then he just walks and says, okay, well, then I'm not playing. He's like the little kid when he used to play Cowboys and Indians or War. He was like the kid who just like, no, you didn't shoot me. No, I'm not going down. No, I'm not doing that. Okay, well, there's no point of playing that. If we already know who's going to win all the time, and it's always you, and you're not going to play along, what is the point? And CM Punk does not like to play along unless, hey, you know, it's with his closest personal friends. And when you start to hear other wrestlers like Booker T, Conan, several other people literally say, well, that's always been CM Punk, then you have to start to believe it. And you have to start to say, yeah, this is not someone you really want for your federation. Tony Khan's wisest move would have been to put that money in his back pocket and said, to be honest with you, I don't want to be held hostage. And I don't want my locker room disrupted. Let me ask you a question. Has the morale in AEW gotten better or worse since CM Punk showed up? Before CM Punk showed up, did you hear people saying, I want to leave, I'm out of here, I don't want to be here anymore, I'm not being used, I don't think this place is running well? I didn't hear anybody do that. And what does he do? He takes the money, he gets his foot hurt, and says, I guess I can't wrestle for a year. I'll only wrestle on my terms when I feel like I want to wrestle. And if you try to make me, then I'll pull the old WWE thing if you're trying to make me wrestle hurt. I found a doctor who will tell you he can't wrestle. Well, tomorrow I could go out and find a doctor who could tell me I can't work. They're a dime a dozen, and they're more than willing to say it. WWE's doctors examined CM Punk and said he is perfectly fine to get back in the ring. And CM Punk said, my doctors say otherwise. I'm not working. And if you do try to make me work, I'll sue you for trying to make me work hurt, but you better keep the paychecks coming in. And, oh, by the way, that match you got planned at WrestleMania between me and Triple H, you can cancel that. That's not an important enough match for me. It was an important enough match for The Undertaker. It was an important enough match for Shawn Michaels. It was an important enough match for The Rock. It was an important enough match for Stone Cold Steve Austin. Not an important enough match for CM Punk. Now, this proves that Tony Khan doesn't really have his nose to the ground. Because had I been in Tony Khan's position, I would have said, I fully understand. Signing CM Punk is going to get me all the publicity in the world for a couple of weeks or a month, maybe 2 months. And I fully expect the fans are going to go crazy when he first comes out. But is this worth the problems I'm going to get from him? And you know what I would have done? I would have done exactly what reasonable people would have done. I would have went into that dressing room and said, what's the lowdown on CM Punk? I don't know him that well, and I want the truth from you guys. And if that locker room had a said, not the biggest fan, then you just tell him, sorry, dude. We're trying to do something here that's more important than giving you money to show your face on television and getting you over. Because AEW is not about getting CM Punk back over or filling your bank account with money. It's about unity, and it's about good feelings in the dressing room. Because according to people who know, there would have been a lot of people in that dressing room who said, yeah, anonymously, let me say, I'm not for it. Now, of course, there's going to be people who don't know him that well who say, yes, do it, do it. It's going to bring a lot of eyes to the product. But that's where you got to turn to the real professionals. You hired people that worked with him. You hired Mark Henry. You hired The Big Show. You had Swagger over there. You had Jericho over there. You had people who worked with him. All you had to do is say, is this a really good idea at this point? Instead, you went for the quick fix, and you got a couple of 100,000 more views, and now it's dropped back off. And people aren't quite as interested, and the shine is coming off of the CM Punk legacy, because now fans are starting to wake up and say, well, now, wait a minute. He's out here trashing all these other wrestlers. He looks like he just stumbled out of an alleyway somewhere after drinking six bottles of wine. He looks 15 years older than he actually is. He's not even in great shape anymore. He doesn't even present well as a wrestler. It's just like some dude. And he's going to dictate who wins and who loses and what he does and when he does it and who he can talk about and who can't talk about him. How about if I did that? How about if I did that? How about if, you know, if somebody wanted to voice their opinion on this show, I said, well, unless you totally 100% agree with me, don't call me. Because I will just hang up on you. And then I will make fun of you and not even give you a chance to talk. I've always given people a chance to talk, even when they were idiots. I let them dig their own grave. Oh, we've had people call up and say, you know wrestling's fake, right? Or talk about having sex with animals. Or talk about how silly it is for grown men to watch the sport. Or talk about whatever. I let them dig their own grave. I give them 30, 40 seconds to talk, and then I tell them, okay, you're an idiot. You've made a fool of yourself. I don't need to make a fool of you. You just made a fool of yourself. It's time to realize that CM Punk is not the savior of wrestling. CM Punk is a self-promoter, a self-aggrandizer, and he's in business for one reason, and that is CM Punk. And if you told CM Punk tomorrow, we will give you 10 times more money, Gordon, he'd probably be out there selling popcorn because he does not care. He can say he loves the business all he wants. When you love the business, you love it for better or for worse. You understand? It's like a marriage. When you're having bad times, you don't say, I no longer love my husband, I no longer love my wife. You still do. You just got to work it out. When CM Punk is not top guy, I have all the power. I control everything. My word is law. If he doesn't have those things, he doesn't love wrestling. So quite obviously, he doesn't love wrestling at all. He loves being in control. That's a whole different thing. Once again, let's go to a relationship. If your wife said, I'm telling you where you can go, when you can go, how long you can stay, what you can eat, what you can wear, who your friends can be. You can't tell me any of those things, though. I'll do what I want. Then I'm sure it's the perfect marriage for her. How about for you? Well, that's the way CM Punk is now. I'll say what I want, do what I want, take who I'm going to win and wrestle, do whatever I feel like doing, when I feel like doing it, leave when I feel like, come back when I feel like, and if anybody says anything about it, I'll run to management and say, I'll leave. I'll leave this company. That's not healthy. So, Mike, I think really the best thing to do if I was Tony Khan is I would let CM Punk's contract run out. I wouldn't use him all that much. And I just tell him, listen, you can't be the top guy because you want to walk. You can't be the top guy. You don't look like the top guy. You're not in the shape anymore to be the top guy. You don't wrestle well enough to be the top guy. Your use of the microphone is only one way because when someone else comes out who's just as good on the mic and attempts to one-up you, you run to management and cry like a baby. How dare he say that? We really don't need anything like that. And if he wants to walk, let him walk.
Absolutely. And think about it this way. Look at him versus Jericho. Jericho is, what, 50? You know? And Jericho is still good on the mic. He's still relevant. Jericho is still relevant. Unlike CM Punk, Jericho still presents well. You could buy – if they want to make Jericho the top guy, I mean, they're making rumors about maybe putting a championship around Jericho's waist again. I wouldn't be at all against that because Jericho still presents well, right? You know, Jericho is still great on the mic. He still tries. It's obvious that he loves the sport. He loves the business, right? It's obvious. So, yeah, I'm for Jericho holding a championship at some point. I'm not for, you know, go ahead and fire him because you know one thing. With Triple H in charge at the WWE, he is not going back to the WWE is CM Punk, because Triple H is going to have a long memory on him not wanting to face him in that match. So he's right. done in the business, because the NWA isn't going to give him that money he wants, and neither is Impact.
Right. Now, Derek is asking, what exactly did CM Punk do? Well, basically what he did was, let's just say that Derek and I are in the same wrestling federation, and Derek is backstage, but he's not booked, and he cannot come out. And I say, hey, Derek, all your fans are here. They want to see you. Come out. Come out and face me, because if you don't come out and face me, you're basically telling the world that you're a coward and you're afraid of me. So I'll sit right here and wait for you, because I know you're a coward, and I know you're not coming out. Prove to all the fans that you are indeed exactly what I just said you are. You are a coward who will not come out and refute anything I said, because you know everything I just said is true. And you're backstage saying, I'm not allowed to come out. I don't have a spot. How is that fair? How would you feel about that? I would never do that to anybody. And I never did. A good amount of the time, I was a face, so I didn't have to. But the few bits of time I was a heel, I said terrible things about people. But I always knew they were going to get the microphone. I always knew they were going to get a chance to rebut it, or they had the microphone first. Did I cross lines? Yes. But I always, always asked the person first, is it okay to cross that line? Because that's respect. And if in any way, shape, or form they said, I really would rather not, then I didn't prize people with it. You don't meet somebody and say, hey, dude, I'm going out there and do my promo on you in a minute or two, and I know you're not going to be able to do a promo on me tonight, but, you know, I'm basically going to say I'm going to beat your ass. Okay, and then I come out and say, yeah, this guy just got divorced from his wife, and turns out she has a venereal disease, and his kid is a hooker, and oh, great. And then backstage he's ready to kill me. Why would I say that? What's that got to do with wrestling? I mean, in the example I gave about the one wrestler's sister, she was going to be a part of the show. She was going to actually be get into the ring for a, not for a wrestling match, but she was going to intervene in a match. And I said, well, might as well cut a promo on her, give her a little bit of motivation of why she might want to. But I checked. And I made sure it wasn't crossing any lines. And I certainly made sure before and after to go over to the parties involved and say, you know, I'm kidding. You know, CM Punk having a bully pulpit saying, Adam Page can't come out of that dressing room because Tony Khan don't have him booked. So now I'm going to call him a coward and tell and say, hey, fan, cheer for Adam Page to come out. If he's such a big cowboy and not a coward, he'll come out here and say everything I said is wrong. But he won't, because he knows I'm right. And he's a coward. How's that helping Adam Page's career? Adam Page is a face. And CM Punk is supposed to be a face. And by the way, CM Punk is not as good on the mic as people think he is, because, oh, it's very, you know, clever to say, oh, well, John Moxley's the third best member of his clique. But then again, that's the story of his life. He was always the third best member of whatever clique he was in. And then saying, he's not the only John that I'll beat, but the other John I fought was a lot better. Oh, so basically what you're saying is WWE was superior. The talent there was much, much better. I'm in a low class now. I got your leftovers. And those guys don't hold a candle to the guys I fought in WWE. Way to promote AEW. Way to promote them, CM Punk. Shouldn't it be the opposite? Shouldn't you go over there and say, I've got some, you know, badass dudes in the WWE, but here, we're on a little bit of a higher level. No, you just did exactly the opposite. You just basically said everybody I fought in the WWE is much tougher than these idiots, and if I can handle them, I can certainly handle you. How's that good for AEW? How would you like it if your chef said, well, I've worked in way better restaurants than this, so if I can put out quality food, I should be able to cook the garbage you want me to cook. Would you hire him? Ludicrous. I don't think Punk has added much. He added the initial shock value and surprise for about a month, Todd, and after that, I don't think he's added a thing.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about CM Punk and everything. You know, we've been saying this for a while. He don't love the business. He's not a fan. He just in it for the money and in business for himself 100% of the time. I was never a big fan of him when he was in Ring of Honor. I was not a big fan of him when he was in Impact. And certainly not WWE, and now not in AEW.
No, I think we all kind of saw through him. There are still people who don't, but I think that some people are starting to wake up and realize the guy's not really what he says he is. I don't think in the history books CM Punk is going to be thought of as an elite member of this business. I think he's more going to be thought of as, yeah, he was a dude who came in and made some waves, but never really attained the reputation. See, there are people who are loving on CM Punk, saying, CM Punk is so great and wonderful, and he is wrestling, and it's why everything that's great about wrestling is CM Punk. And you're the same people who are laughing at Ric Flair. A 74, 5-year-old man climbing into the ring. You got your priorities mixed up. Here's a guy who said, unless you pay me boatloads of money, I would never lower myself to get into a wrestling ring again. Pay me boatloads and boatloads and boatloads of money, and I might consider, if you let me call all of my own shots, coming to your federation, downgrading all of your guys, making myself look great. And then you've got Ric Flair, who doesn't need another dime, but loves the business so much that he says, I just want to have one more match. I just want to feel that one more time. And you think he's an idiot for doing that. I think he's a hero. I'll take him 1,000,000 times to 1 over CM Punk because that's a man who loves what he's doing. I've said this about other businesses. Do you honestly, in your wildest dreams, think the Rolling Stones need money? Do you honestly, in your wildest dreams, think that Elton John needs money? Do you think they need to say, Jesus Christ, I got to get myself on an airplane and go to this state and this country and that country and do gigs every night and set up and do sound checks and I'm 70-some-odd freaking years old and I could just be laying on the beach somewhere with $1 billion? And they don't love what they do? You think they're doing it for money? These people are not doing it for money. They couldn't spend it. If they started today, for the rest of their life, they could not spend their money. They're doing it because they love it. Let's see if CM Punk will do that. Let's see if CM Punk, when he finally wraps up his AEW stint, says, I love wrestling so much that even if a small federation who really needs me, like an NWA or Impact, even if they can't really afford a lot of money, I'll go there and try to help them. Like friggin' hell he will. And that's the difference, Mike. Oh, I got the wrong guy. Hold on. Let me get the phone going here. There we go.
Hello?
Go ahead, Mike.
Yep.
That is the difference. Think about it. Look at him versus, let's say, a Dustin Rhodes. Dustin Rhodes is, what, 55 years old? And I guarantee
right.
you that in 10 years, 15 years, if Dustin Rhodes wants to, they'll bring Dustin Rhodes back to the WWE and he'll do a match, you know, because he's another one that loves the sport. He was brought up right. I mean, you look, there's a reason why they use, why they're using Billy Gunn, you know. There's a reason why they're using you know, guys like that. And you're right to look at these musicians. I'll put it to you another way. There's a do you think that, you know, Boy George, who's made how many millions of dollars doing music, why is he doing The Voice? Because he loves the music business, and he genuinely wants to help out young musicians. That's why he does The Voice.
Yeah, you see, there's a difference. Once, you know, I don't like to make baseball analogies that often because it's not a baseball show, but there are baseball players who say, unless you pay me $70 million a year, I'll walk away. I don't care if I ever play another game. Who cares? Provided you come up to my pay scale. And I remember an interview I saw fairly recently, probably 5-6 years ago, with a retired Keith Hernandez who said, you know what the secret was? Of course I wanted money. Of course I wanted to make as much money as possible. But the secret was I would have played for free. I just love baseball. And there's no way on earth that if I was capable of playing, I wasn't going to play. That's different. That makes you a baseball player. That makes you someone who loves what you do. You think Michael Caine at age, I don't know, 80, or however old he is, still needs to make any film? Do you think he can't sit on his money? All that man would have to do for the rest of his life is say, I'll sit in a chair and sign autographs at $150 a rip at some convention somewhere, and somebody will give me $50,000 to do it. He doesn't have to work. So when you see guys like Ric Flair, when you've seen guys like Terry Funk, when you've seen guys who said, I know it's risking my health, I know it's risking my welfare, but I love this business so much, I can't stop. Then you better put some respect on your voice when you talk about them. Because for every one of them, there's a CM Punk who says, I don't even care about wrestling, but if you want to give me a boatload of money, I'll show up as long as I get to pick the rules and I get to say who I beat and I get to say when. Well, hell, is anybody will do that. I don't love boxing. I don't even like boxing all that much. But if you want to pay me $10, $12 million, I'll fight whoever you want me to fight. I'll probably lose. But hell, I'll give it a shot for that much money. But does that make me a boxer, or does that make me an opportunist? That's where the difference is. There are guys busting their ass for $10 and a hot dog in the Indies because they love it. Not because they're getting rich. They all have day jobs. But they love it, and they dream one day I might not have to have a day job. One day somebody might see my passion for this business and say, let's give him a shot. When you lose your passion and it all becomes about money and nothing else, walk away because you're stealing someone's money. If you no longer have the passion and you no longer can deliver, walk away. Simple as that. Anyway, let's get on to this Triple H thing. You know, there's a lot of people saying, oh, the Triple H era is upon us and it's so much better. Even Tony Khan has been quoted as saying WWE's up their game now. And it's up to AEW to up their game because now things are going to get different. Listen, don't put all your eggs in the basket of Triple H, and I'm going to tell you why. Triple H had full control over NXT when they went up against AEW initially. Did they win? Did they destroy AEW in the ratings, or did they lose every single week? He had full control of the roster. It was his staff that was on there. He was making every decision, and he had a good, strong roster of people. He didn't win. If Triple H was a genius, NXT would have lit it up. NXT would have been doing, you know, 1.3, 1.6 million and blowing the doors off of AEW and stopping them from really achieving anything. He didn't do that at all. So if he implements the same policies, how are we supposed to think he's a genius? WWE just simply becomes Triple H's more high-profile NXT. is that a formula that worked? I don't see any evidence that that's a formula that worked. So while we may be seeing marginal improvements, let's give it a year. Let's give it 7 months. Let's see what ends up happening. Because to be perfectly honest with you, I don't have the faith that some of the other people seem to have. I've been talking to people who think Triple H is just the savior of WWE. Well, if he's that good, why didn't he save NXT when they were getting clobbered every single week? There's no good answer for that question. He had the talent. He had the book. He had all of his people in place. It was his operation, and he was running it, and it failed. So I'm not getting that excited about it yet. And I'm hoping that it's not a one-man operation. I'm hoping that Triple H fully realizes, look, I need some help and some backup, and it ain't going to come from guys who are down there in NXT just doing the same thing that I was doing because that didn't work. I need some help with people who might not agree with me all the time, and we can come to some happy medium between my vision and their vision, because Triple H's vision on its own has not proven to be successful. It just hasn't. So I'm a little bit worried, Todd, because once again, you know, if Triple H was the answer, then certainly NXT would have beat AEW in the ratings on a regular basis.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, how Vince, I mean, what I'm saying, how Triple H is going to save the WWE on the main roster guys. It failed on the last time when he was doing the NXT thing. It failed on their competition on Wednesday nights. That failed. How he's going to save the main roster?
See, that's my fear. That's my fear. WWE fans, I don't want their expectations to be super high. Because if your expectations are super high, he's not going to meet them. If you say, I just want things to get marginally better, I want the show to focus a little more on wrestling, I want some of the titles to mean a little bit more than they did, I don't want there to be this ridiculous censorship of words, and I want it to be maybe a little slightly more adult than Vince normally allowed, Triple H might be able to pull that off. But if you're saying, this is going to be so great, WWE is going to return to their heyday of 3.6 million people. Don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. Because Triple H's vision, while it's good, and I always enjoyed NXT when he ran it, isn't all that mainstream. If it was, NXT would have been mainstream. They're on the same network as Raw. Raw's drawing, you know, 1.8 million, and NXT was drawing what? 400,000 to 500,000? Convinced. He's going to have to walk that line and say, what worked in NXT won't necessarily work in WWE because we have more of a mainstream audience. And if you're willing to understand that and say, can we take the best elements of NXT and mix them with the best elements of WWE, then you will get the best product possible. But if you say, there weren't really any good elements in WWE, so I'm just going to make WWE a more mainstream NXT, it's not going to work. It's absolutely not going to work. Because you're going to get what I call those quote-unquote temporary fans. Those are the fans who say, I'd rather see Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa in WWE than I would Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns. Okay, well, but nobody else would. Will it be a better match? Yes. Would it be a WWE-style match? No. And while some elements of the wrestling audience would find that match more entertaining, the mainstream of it won't. That's what you've got to understand. You're not dealing with just like guys like me and Mike and Todd and whoever. You're dealing with 10-year-old kids. You're dealing with older people. You're dealing with people who want to be more entertained than to say, oh, what a great series of moves. Now, I'm not saying you can't have Tommaso Ciampa against Johnny Gargano, but if you're telling me that's my WrestleMania, you're insane. That's insanity. And you don't get the business. Because as good as Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano are, especially when they fight each other, I could draw more people at WrestleMania by pulling The Undertaker out of retirement against Stone Cold Steve Austin out of retirement. And I'd sell that place out 10 times faster than Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa would. And that's just the way it is, folks. That's just the way it is. Because it's the entertainment business. It's not a sport. We've tried to drill that into your mind a million times over. Let me give you a great example. I know people who work at a facility that hosts concerts, outdoor concerts in the summertime. Big, probably hold 8,000-9,000 people, 10,000 people. And they have big names. They have the Who on their final tour. They have like Chicago, and they had, you know, they have big names, big bands. Beach Boys. You know who drew the most this year to that venue? New Kids on the Block. That's who sold the most tickets. Not the Who. Not Chicago. New Kids on the Block, who I promise you lip sang about 94.5% of that concert. And don't play any instruments. Because it's entertainment. It's not always about talent. It's about what people want to see. And your average 10-year-old kid doesn't give one squat ass about Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa. But they sure as hell would if it was like Roman Reigns and The Rock. And you, being a wrestling snob, saying, but that match will not live up to expectations. They won't be able to go 30 minutes and do what Gargano and Ciampa does. It says that's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. You might think it matters. But the greater audience that the WWE has amassed do not think it matters. If all that was cared about is the quality of matches, then AEW right now would be doing 2 million. And they're not. It's entertainment, folks. People want to be entertained by larger-than-life characters who people have come to know not just as a wrestler, but as a superstar, as a celebrity. Of course these guys are great athletes. I take nothing away from Gargano or Ciampa. I'd rather see that match too. But please tell me that you're not so arrogant in your own critique of wrestling that you honestly think that if Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano set up an autograph signing next to The Rock, that they're going to outdraw The Rock. It's not going to be close. It's not going to be close. And they're never going to reach that level of popularity ever. They're going to be known amongst that group of hardcore die-hard wrestling fans as two great athletes who were superior in the ring. They're never going to be known as superstars because they don't have that intangible. So you understand the difference of what I'm saying, right, Mike?
I do. I mean, look, there's a reason why, you know, I'll put it to you this way. Look at Billy Gunn. There's a reason why people want to see Billy Gunn. And it's not that he's doing all that much wrestling. He's entertaining. Billy Gunn is entertaining. I like the potential of his voice, but it's a good idea to put Billy Gunn with the Acclaimed, because the Acclaimed are entertaining as well. So there's a reason why that works. That whole situation works with Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed, and it's both of them are entertaining. And there's no doubt in my mind that Billy Gunn and his boys, I don't know what their contracts are like with AEW. Triple H is in power over there. At some point, Billy Gunn and his boys are going to go back, going to be in the WWE. There's no doubt.
Yeah, you see, I hope that Triple H understands. And he should better than anyone, but he may have gotten spoiled with his NXT. That it's more important in the WWE to be a superstar than a great wrestler. It just is. And if you're one of those fans who's cursing at me right now, saying, oh, that's bullshit, well, then WWE's not for you. But that is a fact. It's not my opinion. That's a fact. Was Stone Cold Steve Austin a great wrestler? Or was he a great character? Was The Rock a great wrestler? Or was he a great character? Triple H, is he a great wrestler or was he a great character? But these are the people you remember. Undertaker, same way. Did he do all kinds of things that were so super impressive in the ring, or was it just his character and the way he played it? These are the ones you're going to remember. Okay? Those are the ones you're going to remember. You remember Dean Malenko? Was he a superstar? Dean Malenko wrestled circles around 90% of the WWE. 90% of them. Is he a superstar? No. Look no further than Kurt Angle. excuse me. Look no further than Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle was on his way to abject disaster. He went to a ECW event. Got highly offended by it, said, if you use my name in this, I'm suing you. And years later said, I didn't get it. And in my first even few months in WWE, I didn't get it. But then I did get it. And the idea behind it is, it doesn't matter really how good of an athlete you are. It's great if you can do both. But if you can choose only one or the other, then you better be a great character. Because that's the moments people are going to remember. And in his Hall of Fame speech, he told the young wrestlers that. He said, remember, no one comes up to me on the street and says, I remember that suplex. I remember that angle lock that you did. I remember that great spot in this match. He said, you know what they say? I remember when you drove the milk truck in. I remember when you were afraid of your own pyro. I remember when you did this or that crazy thing. Those are the moments that the fans care about. And those are the moments you got to keep giving them, because that's what really this is about. More than your athletic performance. Now, once in the blue moon, a guy like Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, several other people like that will come along who you say they're both. They're fantastic wrestlers, and they're larger-than-life personalities who can really, really deliver that star power. But that doesn't happen a lot. It happens now and then. And those are the true greats. Ric Flair. Dusty Rhodes, who could wrestle. People underestimated how good of a wrestler he was. But think about it. Some of the greatest wrestlers couldn't cut it in WWE because they weren't larger than life. Harley Race came over here. I guess if you're a wrestling historian, ask anybody who one of the top wrestlers in the world is, and you're going to get Harley Race as an answer. Through a lot of them. Did he ever accomplish anything in the WWE? No. And why is that? Because he couldn't play that game. He wasn't a larger-than-life personality. He just was a really good worker. And that's not enough. So I hope Triple H, Todd, remembers it's not enough to just be a good worker. He has to push those larger-than-life personalities.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, about Harley Race, he was a big fish in a small pond, practically, back in the day when he was in the...
Yeah, and he didn't... Again, Mike, I mean, that's one of the greatest wrestlers in the world, but he didn't achieve much in WWE.
No. And think about this. What do you remember about Sting? Couple things. One, in blowing out his knee climbing a cage. Two, just recently, him diving off a 15-foot high balcony on AEW. And why is that? He's not one of the greatest wrestlers, and he really didn't do much in the WWE, and that was probably Triple H's fault because he didn't want Sting to win, and of course, he'd gotten hurt due to a certain other person, but you know, Sting is a guy that is what was Dustin Rhodes before he went to the WWE? You know,
yeah,
he was a fine wrestler,
but no
when
kidding.
He got a hold, yeah. They gave him what everybody agrees was a punishment gimmick, right? But he took that thing and made it big. He made it huge. He became the personality.
He certainly did, and I can vouch for this because he said it to me personally in New Jersey when I asked him about it. And nice guy, by the way, very nice guy. Said to me, when you're given something like that, you can do one of two things. You can resist it every single minute of it and fail, or you can embrace it and do the best you can with it and have fun. And I guess I looked a little befuddled by that answer. He said, let me explain. And there was a guy, two people in back of me for autograph. And I actually went around the table and sat next to Dustin. And he said, see that guy, watch. And when that guy came up, he said to him, do you want a picture with me? And the guy turned four shades of red. And the guy's like, yeah. He goes, do you want a nice picture? Or a naughty picture. And the whole place erupted, and the guy's like super embarrassed or whatever, but he gets his picture and he said, that's what I mean. You can embrace it, have fun with it, get people to laugh and enjoy it, or you can resist it and hate every minute of it. I decided to embrace it and enjoy it. And he made that character legendary. Now, as far as Sting is concerned, let's face it. Sting was an average wrestler. He had that surfer whatever gimmick where, ow, and he had the face paint, and that wasn't going anywhere. Sting became the legend when he dropped from the rafters and did the Crow. He looked a little bit like Brandon Lee. As soon as he dropped from the ceiling with a trench coat and the bat and did the whole thing, fans loved it. They loved that. That's a character. Sting's wrestling did not change. His character changed. Do you think Triple H would be where he was right now if he's still wearing ruffled shirts and bowing and had his hair in a French braid and he was called the Blue Blood? Or do you think because he changed his character, that's what was successful? Do you think Mark Callis, if he was still mean Mark Callis, would have rose to the heights that he is? Or do you think The Undertaker did that? Do you think Stunning Steve Austin would be a household name? Or do you think Stone Cold did that? See, that's the deal, folks. I'm not saying that their talent didn't do it. They played those characters perfectly. And their talent as an actor and as an athlete drove those characters to greater heights than probably any other wrestler could have done it. But it still was the character that did it. It wasn't just them. Mean Mark Callis was not going to be an icon of professional wrestling until he got a hold of The Undertaker and did it so well. Stunning Steve Austin was not going to be an icon of professional wrestling until they stumbled upon the Stone Cold thing and he did it so well. So forgive me if I don't think Tommaso Ciampa just being Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano just being Mr. Wrestling Johnny Gargano is going to rise to those heights, because they're not, unless they're given a better gimmick and they play it well. Then maybe they can. I'm not saying they can't. They've got the talent to do it, but right now they don't have that. Their gimmick is, I'm just me, and I'm a good wrestler. well, that's not good enough anymore. And as much as the fans would like to try to make that good enough, it's not good enough. Because it'll never reach the mainstream audience who still want that. It'll only reach the niche audience of wrestling fans who say, I don't care about that. I just want good 20-minute solid matches. There's a good amount of you, but there's not enough. There's not 2.8 million that's going to watch Raw and SmackDown every week. It's just not going to happen. So you can carry a couple of people like that on your roster, but don't expect them to get the same hoopla for their matches as guys who have great, strong, powerful characters. I mean, what was the knock on Bray Wyatt? He never really delivered in his matches. They weren't really so great as The Fiend. Oh, yeah, but boy, you sure got close to the TV set when the Funhouse came up. Everybody sure went nuts when the entrance came on. Everybody drove their fingers raw on the keyboards ordering Fiend merchandise. Same with Alexa Bliss. Did Alexa Bliss sell all kinds of merchandise being the goddess? Or did she sell all kinds of merchandise when she became that witchy, gothy Alexa Bliss? There you go. That is the wrestling game, folks. Now, you don't have to like it. I know there are these new fans who say, that shouldn't be. You should be able to just be named Joe Smith and wear black trunks and Bill Jones and wear green trunks, and if you have a good 30-minute match, we go, oh, you're great. Well, that's never going to succeed mainstream. You know what that's like saying? That's like saying, I am a virtuoso guitar player. So I'm going to put out an album of me just shredding the guitar for an hour. And people who love, love, love guitars are going to say, he's a genius. That guy's phenomenal. And it's going to sell 100 CDs. Kid spitting in a microphone is going to sell 2 million. Because it has wider appeal. The kid spitting in the microphone has no talent. Or very much. But he has wider appeal. The guy who's shredding the guitar has a wealth of talent, but the appeal isn't there for it. Only among aficionados of that very limited thing. And that's what pure wrestling is. Pure wrestling has a very limited following. They want to see these larger-than-life characters. They want to see that. They don't want to wear on their shirt, Johnny Gargano, excellent wrestler. They want to wear The Fiend. They want to wear Suck It. Okay? They want to wear Mr. Socko. It's as simple as that, folks. You don't have to like it, but that's the truth, Todd. I mean, that's what wrestling is.
Well, you have some idea, like you said, where everything is going on with the characters and everything. You know, you're absolutely right there. I agree with you 100% on this.
So let's hope Triple H understands it. And let's hope Triple H realizes we can have good, solid wrestling. But we need the characters. Some of these guys have been handcuffed. It's not like some of these guys that are good characters can't deliver. Some of these guys who have been doing, 3 and 4 minute matches, but they got a really good character, could do a 15, 20 minute match and be really good. They just haven't been allowed to. So if you want to let them do that, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. But don't eliminate the characters. For instance, I love Pete Dunne. I said on this show a million times, one of my favorite wrestlers ever. When I saw him in the UK tournament, I was like, this guy is freaking awesome. But I guess I'm in the minority when I say I like him better as Butch. He's more interesting. Before, he was just, I'm a little guy who uses joint manipulation, and I'm mean. Now he's interesting. The way he dresses, the way he acts, it's a whole different character, and it's more interesting, and it has more marketable appeal. Once again, if you look like some dude that works in a, auto body shop, and you get on stage looking exactly like that, and you sing Dracula, and you sing, all of Rob Zombie's songs, you ain't going to have the audience. But if you look like Rob Zombie and you do that, you are going to get the audience because there's a marketable appeal to that. You're not marketable if you look like some auto mechanic somewhere. You're only marketable if you look like somebody that you say that's a different type of person. I'm not bumping into that person every day. Now, it has nothing to do with talent. It goes both ways. It even goes to the sex appeal. Do you honestly think that if a 350-pound young lady could sing exactly like Britney Spears, that she would have been successful? Or do you think it was because there was a combination of talent and sex appeal that was marketable? Do you think if the Backstreet Boys were all awkward 15-year-olds with overbites and missing teeth, that they would have been marketable? Or do you think they were handpicked because they said young females are going to find these guys attractive? It's marketability, folks. Sorry. I'm sorry to piss in your Kool-Aid, but that's what it is. So if you got a guy who's just a brilliant wrestler and he's not marketable at all, you can't put him on top because he's not marketable just because he's talented. You have to have that something else. Stone Cold Steve Austin was the ringmaster. You think people were lining up to buy ringmaster t-shirts? You think people were lining up to go see the ringmaster? It was bombing. It was death. It was done. That's why Steve Austin begged, let me do a different character. This isn't going to work. I'm dead in the water here. And look what happened when they let him do it. Same wrestler. Didn't get any better or any worse. He changed his character. That's the important thing in wrestling, Mike, and it's more important technically than your in-ring talent.
Right, and think about it this way. In AEW right now, what's one of the biggest things happening in AEW? It's not the Gun Club, which is the actual name of the team. When the feud began with them and the Acclaim, what did the Acclaim do? They referred back to when their dad was calling himself Mr. Ass, and they started calling the Gun Club the Ass Boys. All right, and that's caught on. I would assume that they've got a shirt waiting for that. You know, they've got a shirt out for that. I would assume, but that thing, every time those guys show up. At some point during that match, you know it's coming. You know Ass Boys is coming. And that's what it is. And think about Triple H. It was Jean-Paul Levesque. He goes to the WWE, to the WCW. What did they make him? They called him Terror Rising, right?
Right.
It took him two things in two different companies to get it right. It took him Terrorizing, and it took him the Blue Blood before he became the Gang.
Well, look at Scott Hall, the Diamond Stud. That didn't work. Kevin Nash was Oz. Remember that horrible thing? And Vinny Vegas didn't work. Bray Wyatt was Husky Harris. That didn't work. There's a lot of things that don't work. Sometimes it's just even changing your appearance a little bit. It's not your name. This is what I hope Triple H clearly understands, but I want wrestling fans to realize, do not overexpect to see some improvements. But I also don't want to hear 4 months from now fans say, Triple H is doing a terrible job, he's this bullshit, because I know that's what I'm going to hear. The very same people who are saying he's saving WWE is going to turn on him in a heartbeat. Unless he can walk that tightrope between good, solid in-ring action and larger-than-life superstar-type characters. You need both. You absolutely need both. Otherwise, it just becomes NXT on a grander scale, and that is not a proven formula for success. It just isn't. Now, as far as SmackDown this week, I'm really at a crossroads because I don't understand, I get. Number one, the elephant in the room is why wasn't Nikita Lyons and her tag team partner there? I guess they're both injured. Neither one were cleared to wrestle. So they had to make last-minute substitution. This is what I mean when I say you don't have enough teams. You don't have enough teams. I don't know why you're holding a women's tag team championship tournament. You don't have enough teams to make this relevant. But aside from that, I was glad to see that Liv Morgan didn't get booed out of the building. But if you're handling Ronda, if you want Ronda Rousey to be the bad guy, you're going about this completely ass backwards, upside down. Because Ronda Rousey came off like a badass, I don't give a damn about anybody face. Not a heel. Not a heel. And it's not going to do Liv Morgan any favors when there's a rematch. Now, Shayna Baszler came off as a heel, which will certainly do Liv Morgan justice. But not Ronda Rousey. If you wanted Ronda Rousey to be the heel, Ronda Rousey can't be standing in that ring waiting for security to toss them all around. She's got to duck and run. Otherwise, it makes no sense. By the way, what you've done with Ronda Rousey now has basically signed Liv Morgan's death warrant, because if Ronda Rousey can throw around adult male security guards at will and she can't beat Liv Morgan, that doesn't make any sense. So you backed yourself into a corner here, and I can see Liv Morgan's popularity slowly slipping away. I warned everybody about this. She's not good enough on the mic. She doesn't come across sympathetic enough, and she doesn't have the mic skills to earn that. Yes, the WWE did her no favors with her booking. They did her no favors at all. And they certainly didn't do her any favors by writing her script to go out there and basically lie to the audience. But under the same token, she's not doing herself a lot of favors either. The way she talks isn't conducive to a face. Even if she's saying the right things. See, there's where the problem lies. When you're coming off sounding like you're lecturing constantly, even if you're saying the right things, you become annoying. We worried about Bianca Belair with that, if you remember, when she first came in and said, I'm the best, and I'm the fastest, and I'm the greatest. I said, this is not going to work. If you're just going to come in and be a total bitch and an egomaniac, I don't think the fans are going to like you. She's eased up on that a lot. Liv Morgan needs to calm down and talk slowly. And not with a whiny, because that's annoying. It doesn't come across as sympathetic. It comes across as annoying. No matter what you're saying. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with Liv Morgan. I don't think she's going to rise to that popularity that people thought she was going to rise to. And I warned you ahead of time she probably wouldn't. I said, she needs more time. She needs more coaching. What would do Liv Morgan a world of good was the same thing that did Roman Reigns a world of good, and that is go find an acting coach. And the first thing an acting coach will tell you is your presentation of how you deliver your lines is often more important than your lines. You'll see that sometimes with a comedian. You ever see a comedian and you're like, that was funny, and you're laughing and laughing and laughing, and then you go tell the joke to your friend and they're like, that's stupid. Yeah, because you didn't tell it the same way. You said the same words, but not in the same way. And it was the way that the person told it. That's why it was funny. John Candy was a master of that. If you were into John Candy could say things that was funny only because of the way he said it. If you repeated the exact same things, it's not funny. It was funny because of his facial expressions, the way he delivered the line, his body language, everything. Liv Morgan has none of that. Every single part of it screams, I'm a Karen, and I'm a whiner. And that's not something that people want as a face. She needs to come across as that I've worked my whole life for this, and I don't want it taken away from me. She needs to come across as this humble, I achieved a little too much too quick, and now I have to desperately try to hang on to it. You know who's the master of that? Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan was a master of that. Daniel Bryan knew exactly how to deliver his lines that made them impactful and made it feel like you wanted to root for him. And Liv Morgan could take some acting lessons, maybe, if she's really serious about her career, take some acting lessons. Now, there's some people who deliver their lines poorly, too. Ronda Rousey's not good at delivering lines. But whatever reason, she does come across body language-wise and just aura-wise as a badass. She has that aura. Brock Lesnar's the same way. Brock Lesnar's not great on the microphone. But there's something about Brock Lesnar's presence that's like, well, yeah, you definitely don't want to fuck with that guy. Liv Morgan doesn't have that. She should be taking some lessons from, like, Alexa Bliss. Now, Alexa Bliss is, what, 5 foot tall? If she weighs 100 pounds, I'm shocked. But she has a way of delivering her lines that's very endearing, and you want to root for her. Her body language, her facial expressions, the way she says things in a calm manner and not necessarily screaming and hollering. And there's a difference. Bianca Belair got real good at that real quick. Her initial body language, facial expressions, and things when she first came in screamed heel, heel, heel. And then little by little, she adjusted it. She was smart enough to realize this is coming across too much. Let me back off on it. Let me show confidence, but not arrogance. Let me show, pride, but not ego. And she got good at it. And she's a lot better now. That's what I think that Liv Morgan needs to do, Mike, if she's going to be successful.
Absolutely. And think about it this way. You're looking at there's a particular person in Jade Cargill, okay? What does she present herself as when she speaks? Her attitude, her body language screams what? Screams heel, right? That's what screams. Now, at some point, they're going to flip her, and she's going to have to change, you know? And does she have the ability? She's still young in her career. Does she have that ability? I'm not sure yet. We have to see when it happens. Now, you mentioned it's funny, being funny and all that stuff, kind of harkens back to there was a scene in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Roger Rabbit had handcuffed himself to the cop in the movie, you know, the guy who's the private investigator in the movie. And at one point they were sitting in the movie theater, and they were trying to get out of the cuffs, and he goes, he gets out of the cuffs. He gets his hand out of the cuffs, and the guy says, the private investigator goes, "Well, why didn't you do it?" "I could only do it when it was funny," was the line. That's the line. And it worked because it's a comedy and all that stuff, but it worked, that line. And frankly, if you wanted to present, as going back to the whole thing with Ronda Rousey, if you wanted to present her as a heel, when she flipped that one guy on the ground and was holding his arm, what should have happened is you should have had her kayfabe break the arm.
Yeah, but, you know, even then it's too late, Mike, because you got Adam Pearce there being the authority figure, and she's saying, "I want to be unsuspended." and the fans are rooting for her to be unsuspended. So you would have had to make Adam Pearce the sympathetic character. You would have had to make Adam Pearce the guy who fans were saying, I feel bad for him. I feel bad for the security guards. We didn't. What do we see? One lone woman standing in the ring while five men climb in to get her. And we're supposed to be rooting against the woman? Adam Pearce sending in five men to drag off one woman, and we're supposed to root against her? Then when the police show up, she simply says, okay, well, I'm not going to fight the police. And we're supposed to root against her? If you really wanted us to root against her, you would have given her Shayna Baszler's spot. Come in there and beat up Liv Morgan and say, I know my match isn't at Clash at the Castle, but this is just a reminder. Anytime, anywhere, I want my title back. It's going to be just as easy as this. Then people would have said, okay, Ronda's a bully. It's not what you did. So you quite obviously have given up on the idea of Ronda Rousey being a heel. And the reason you gave up on it is because Liv Morgan got booed out of the building. Thanks to your lousy booking and her less than good delivery. She does not come across as a sympathetic character. Now, you tried with Shayna Baszler to make her that. And I'm sure that they'll root for her against Shayna Baszler. But I don't think they're going to do it against Ronda Rousey, Todd. At least that's the way I'm reading it.
I'm absolutely right there, like you said, about this thing with Ronda Rousey and everything, with her getting cheered out of the building and Liv Morgan getting booed. And it's supposed to be the other way around with Ronda Rousey. She's supposed to be getting booed out of the building, and Liv Morgan should have been cheered.
Yeah, now Derek is saying he thinks that the Nikita Lyons and her tag team partner, one of the two, was unvaxxed and couldn't enter Canada. I don't have any confirmation to that. I was told they both were medically not cleared to wrestle. As far as the Usos were concerned, they were not allowed due to the DWI convictions. There's some kind of weird rule in Canada about that. And they were not allowed to travel to Canada based on their Jimmy's DWI multiple convictions. But it wouldn't surprise me if it was vaccine related. Still holding on to this fallacy, even when the CDC has come out and basically said the vaccinated and the unvaccinated are now basically under the same rules, which is really no rules. They're saying you don't even have to isolate anymore if you're sick. And yet there are some places and some countries and some that are just, oh, no, we're still going to hang on to the draconian laws. They were the same places that said if you don't do what the CDC says, you're not following science. Well, now the CDC says you don't have to do this, and they're saying we're not listening to you. Okay. I don't know. All I do know is it made no sense for the NXT contingent to be there. It really didn't make no sense for Nikita Lyons to be there either. It just goes to show you there are no tag teams and that this belt is just – these belts are – you know, it's just stupid. Sorry, but that's what it is. Now, Sami Zayn was very good this week, and I think they're testing the waters to see – can we flip Sammy? It's a yes and no thing. Because here's the problem with Sammy. You can flip him, and he can do the face character, but he's not as entertaining. He's much, much, much more entertaining as the type of heel he portrays. Much more entertaining. He's always out for him. He's basically Daffy Duck. He's always involved in some kind of scheme that he thinks is going to end up better for him. And he's not really brave, but he's resilient. And if he thinks there's going to be a greater reward, he'll suck up to anybody, and he's comical. That's probably a stronger character than Sami Zayn, the underdog. So they should think about that before they do it. Now, the good news of the night for SmackDown is that when they had the match to decide who was going to face Gunther, obviously there were people in there that wasn't going to be. You knew it wasn't going to be Happy Corbin. That's obvious. You knew it wasn't going to be Ricochet because he's already been there, done that. In fact, you knew it wasn't going to be any heel, really. At least you didn't think so. And I really honestly thought, God have mercy, they're going to give it to Madcap Moss. They're going to push him just that little bit and get him a title shot. And I kept saying to myself, but it would be such a good match if it was Sheamus. But they'll never do it because Sheamus is a heel. But man, would that be a good match, and it would be perfect for a UK thing. But the WWE won't do it. And they did it. And I'm telling you that the minute it happened, I got 12 text messages that said, now I'm watching Clash at the Castle. I've just decided to watch Clash at the Castle, and that's the reason. And I don't blame them, because I got a newsflash for you. These are two old school guys, and they're going to beat the freaking hell out of each other. You are going to see a really hard-fought, honest-to-God, no-frills wrestling match. And both of these guys are going to walk to the dressing room with some bumps and bruises and aches and pains, because that's their style. You could not ask for a better opponent for Gunther than Sheamus. Now, if Triple H is any kind of a promoter, he's going to tell them, we all know Gunther's going to win. But he's got to tell them, you have carte blanche. Go out there, and it can't be a squash match. Yes, we're trying to promote Gunther. But at the same time, this is Sheamus. And he has a reputation here of being a no-holds-barred, flat-out, balls-to-the-wall brawler. And you can't walk over him. So you're going to have to sell plenty. And at the end of the day, yeah, you're winning. But we want this to come across as, my God, what a fight. Not, oh, my God, Gunther destroyed him. Like, if it was Ricochet, you'd have to have Gunther destroy him. If it was Madcap Moss, you'd have to have Gunther relatively destroy him. Maybe, you know, Moss gets a few shots in and maybe an almost three count, but that's about it. Because you need to go on to bigger and better. But with Sheamus, it's different. This has got to make both guys come out look better. It's got to make Sheamus look like, my God, did he ever take it to Gunther? And it's got to make Gunther look like that guy took a beating and still managed to pull it out. So he's tough as nails. That way, both people are better off for it. I think Triple H understands that, Mike.
I think so, too. And here's something else that should happen in this match. You know, we want Gunther as a heel, right? And at some point, we're going to flip Sheamus. I don't know if they're going to want to do it this soon, but here's how to do this. We know that Ludwig Kaiser is going to come out with Gunther. We know that, right? You have at a certain point in the match, you have Kaiser, interfere. And then all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, here comes Butch, and he jumps Kaiser. And they fight to the back or whatever, where Butch gets the better of Kaiser a little bit, because Kaiser's a wrestler, and Butch is just a brawler, right? And he just beats the hell out of Kaiser. And then without Kaiser in the ring, that match goes on, and yeah, he's going to win. It's going to be just him and Sheamus, and Kaiser's nowhere to be found. That's how you handle this thing.
Yeah, it's got to look like a brawl. Now, Derek's saying, why would they book people to be on the show they knew were not vaccinated and couldn't go to Canada? That's why I don't believe it. You'd have to almost be brain dead. You knew you were going to Canada. You knew what they had for their vaccine laws. And you sure as hell knew who was and was not vaccinated. So I don't think you'd advertise somebody who clearly couldn't go. So I'm not sure that's the reason. I've heard nothing to indicate that was the reason. I heard both of them had some injury-related issues. I did hear the Usos were not allowed because of the DWI. But if that is the reason, and one of them's not vaccinated, then the WWE's powers that be are complete morons because they had to know that. You know where you're going, and you know what the requirements are, right? So why would you book it? That would be like saying, oh, well, we're not going to have Edge and Damian Priest this week because it turns out that Damian Priest can't go to Canada. Well, you didn't know. You didn't have the Usos booked, so you sure as hell knew they couldn't. And that wasn't a vaccination issue. So if you knew because of the DWI the Usos couldn't go, you should have known that the women couldn't go if one of them wasn't vaccinated. And besides, if one of them wasn't vaccinated, I think the other would have went anyway, and they would have put a different tag team partner since they're not a legitimate team anyway. So I'm going to say I'm not too sure about that. Not too sure about that at all. Anyway, as far as the Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns thing goes, here's my issue with this. By the way, I did want to call attention to one thing before we go there. Does anybody remember when Bray Wyatt said something about the devil when he was back, when he was the cult leader? Him and his boys was leaning over somebody, and they said something about the devil. And I guess the WWE went nutso and said, under no circumstances do you ever mention the devil again. We don't want to get into that stuff with the parents and the religious people and everybody else. Well, I don't know. I mean, Scarlett put the devil card right up in the tarot deck. So apparently that rule is gone now. And honestly, under a Triple H more lenient rule base, I'd like to see Bray Wyatt back. Because I think if Bray Wyatt was unleashed, now people are saying, well, which would you rather see, Bray Wyatt come back as that cult leader or the Fiend? I think the Fiend. And I'll tell you why I think the Fiend. Because you're getting two for one with that. You're getting that sweater vest, funhouse guy, and you're getting the Fiend. And if Triple H has a brain in his head, it's very, very clear that you're getting two for one. Have the sweater vest guy wrestle. He doesn't have to be that good. He can win a few minor matches, but when he goes up against mid-card to upper mid-card talent, he loses. Present him as a face. Here's Bray Wyatt, the Funhouse host. He's giving away things to kids in the audience. He's waving. He's smiling. He's happy. He's a nice guy. He shakes hands with his opponent. When he loses, he just, well, good match. Thanks for the good match. Leaves the arena smiling, happy, but then something bad happens to the guy who beat him. And it's very clear that that's the Fiend. So you technically have a face who's not all that much of a face because he has a heel persona that comes out when he loses. The sweater vest Bray Wyatt can lose plenty. The Fiend should not lose at all until you have pinpointed this is eventually where we're heading and this will be the person who ultimately beats him. Now, whether that's 8 months down the road or a year and a half down the road, it should be planned ahead of time. this is where we're going with the character. The Fiend is untouched as far as losses until we get here. Here's the chosen person. Here's the circumstances of which it's going to happen. Here's what we're going to do afterwards with that character. Everything needs to be planned, because when you have a character like this, you can't just willy-nilly it and do 50-50 booking. And remember, folks, the man who said 50-50 booking was a good idea was not Vince McMahon. It was Triple H. So, Mike, that worries me a bit.
That does worry me a bit, too. And look, you still have, you know, the ability, if you wanted to do the three faces of Wyatt, like you did the three faces of Foley, right? I mean,
yeah.
Think about it. You got Fiend. You could potentially, you could be getting 3-for-1 with Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, you absolutely could. I mean, what I thought they were going to do with Bray Wyatt that I really was astonished that they didn't is I thought they were going to have him say, I am not the Fiend. People think I am, but I'm not. I really thought that's where they were going with this. And eventually, maybe, obviously it is. And he don't even know it because he's nuts. And he has a split personality. But I really thought for a while he was going to deny it. And instead, they just sort of embraced it and said, no, he knows he is. And that kind of ruined the character. Because the whole idea behind it was, he don't even know. He's so far gone that when he gets into that whatever, he didn't even realize what he does. Like Jekyll and Hyde. Remember when, you know, Dr. Jekyll would be like, what did I do? And say, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. Until he realized, it is me. But initially, he didn't know. I really thought that's what they were going to do with it, but they didn't. They've mishandled Bray Wyatt something fierce. But again, Triple H was the one who said 50-50 booking is a good idea, which is not a good idea. You know when 50-50 booking is a good idea? When you have Ricochet versus Mustafa Ali. And stuff like that. When you have your lower mid-card guys or even your middle mid-card guys going up against each other, I'm fine with 50-50 booking. But you can't 50-50 book Drew McIntyre. You can't 50-50 book Kevin Owens. You can't 50-50 book, the top guys. Because if you do, then it's irrelevant. They become irrelevant. Even Drew McIntyre, to this time, you know, I had a guy say, what do you think about Drew McIntyre? You know, it's kind of time to take the belt off Roman Reigns. Don't you think McIntyre is the guy? And I said, you know, that's a hard question. Because part of me says, no, he's had a title reign. It was not all that successful. I realize it was during COVID and there was a lot of restrictions and no fans and it didn't do him any favors. I realized that. But honestly, his title reign wasn't that exciting. Then again, I can't think of anybody who's any more over. So if you are going to take the belt away from Roman and you want it to be to the next most over guy, I don't know who the next most over guy is if not him. That's a face. Who's over more than him? So, yeah, you painted yourself into a bit of a corner, haven't you? That's the problem. If Triple H really wants to fix the problem, stop promoting and getting over heels when you have a heel champion. Promoting your faces. The next guy for Roman Reigns is this. You think the next guy for Roman Reigns is going to be almost? No. You think the next guy for Roman Reigns is going to be Veer Mahan? No. Then why are you promoting them as these invincible monsters? Where is the faces that you say, well, Roman's never getting by this guy? Where are they? They're non-existent. And in the meantime, you're building up heels. For who? Who are you building up the heels for? That's the problem. And that's what Triple H needs to address, Todd, is the next contenders for Roman Reigns. If you got to go to the well and get the Rock, that's pretty poor.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I remember back in the day, you couldn't find anybody as superstars when all the big names left the company at the time, like a Hogan, a Warrior. They all went to Vince McMahon's rival, Ted Turner, to WCW. And Vince didn't handle big superstars. You know what he did? Repackaged them. They turned into big superstars.
And you got to understand that whoever your champion is, you got to start getting the contenders for them. So if I have a federation and I say my champion is a heel, big heel, who fans can't wait to see get what's coming to them, I got to start promoting faces. Yeah, I'll promote a heel or two here and there too. But my main concern is promoting faces who are going to be the next contender. If I have a face champion, my goal is to have the fans say, how is this face champion ever going to get by this indestructible heel? And the way I do that is to promote two or three heels that you're like, wow, these guys. You know, I'm going to be biting my nails off when he fights the champ because I don't know if the champ can beat him. That's your job. The WWE is doing the exact opposite. They're building indestructible guys. Who could ever beat Almost? Who could ever beat Veer Mahan? Well, I don't know. Who are you building them up for? You don't have a face to build them up for. You should be building up people for Roman Reigns. That's what makes me think they're taking it off Roman Reigns and giving it to a face and not Theory. Because unless they're brain dead, I don't know why you're building up heels for a heel champion. Now, you can make the argument, well, they're going to flip Roman Reigns, but obviously that's not what they've got in mind if they're going to have The Rock at WrestleMania. Because they're not going to have a face, Roman Reigns, against a heel Rock. That's not happening. They'll probably wait till after WrestleMania to flip The Rock, to flip Roman. So right now you got to be building up some faces for him, and there isn't any. You're building up Kevin Owens now. I'm the new Kevin Owens. To do what? Fight Roman Reigns? By the way, I want to take two people to task. The first one is MVP, who I've done nothing but talk good about. I've said he was pretty much Bobby Lashley's savior. I said he was fantastic on the mic. I said he's now being underutilized with Almost. I think the guy is brilliant. I think the guy is a huge, huge, huge asset to the WWE. But he's a moron. He gets on his Instagram account and says, I wish all you fans would stop making dream teams out of African Americans. You know, you don't have to lump us all together. Hey, moron. Did you tell Vince McMahon that? Everybody you've managed is black. Did you say, can I manage a white guy? Or you don't care. So you can mouth off to the fans, but you don't want to mouth off to the powers that be. If you really feel that way, then you should have said, I'm not going to continue to just manage black guys, African Americans, because that lumps us all together. I want to manage other people. I'll manage the Mysterios. I'll manage Sami Zayn. I'll manage somebody. You didn't do it. So you lose the right to yell at the fans. And by the way, genius, the only reason the fans wanted the Hurt Business back wasn't because they were African American. It's because they were entertaining. But naturally, it has to be about race. Because nobody could ever just like a team because they're a good team. See, we all like the New Day because they're all black. We don't like them because they're entertaining. We don't like them because they're good wrestlers. Got to lump them all together. You're the racist for even thinking that. See, because that never crossed my mind. When I said I would love to see the Hurt Business back, it didn't cross my mind that got to lump all the black guys together. It crossed my mind that they were really over and they were really good and the fans were digging it. You're the one who brought race into it. And what's worse is you blame the fans like they're racist when you're the one who's managing these teams and being told to, and you didn't bring it up to the powers that be, did you? How disingenuous can you possibly be? I still think he's good at what he does. I just think he's an idiot. So, Mike, I get tired of these loudmouths yelling at the fans when they're 100% hypocrites.
Right. I mean, look, You know, this is a guy that was good at what he was doing. And think about this. When they were doing the whole thing with Retribution, what did we say almost at the end of that thing when they were walking to the ring and taking their jackets off and rolling up their sleeves? And we said, well, this looks badass. And people were cheering asses off at the four guys, right? And we said, and at one point I was saying, well, they need a fourth guy. They need a fourth active wrestler. You can still have a MVP as a manager, but they need a fourth guy in the ring that could get the job done in the ring. But that was partially mostly due to MVP because of his great, Cedric Alexander and what's his name are good on the mic, but what carried that group on the mic wasn't those two guys. It was MVP. That's how good he was. I mean, he was living up to his three letters, MVP, at that time.
There's no question, but Mike, here's the deal. All of those fans popped for the Hurt Business, kicking the hell out of Retribution. And remember, at the time, Retribution had about 40 members. Remember, they all came with masks and everything. It wasn't just three or four guys. A portion of those guys were white. So let me get this straight. If I cheer for an all-African-American faction while they're beating up Caucasian guys, I'm a racist? Yeah, he doesn't have any idea what he's talking about. I know he has some screwy-ass ideologies politically that he was willing to fight Chris Jericho, one of his best friends, over. But this is a guy who literally makes no sense, that the promoting attitude would be, do you know how many people love the Hurt Business, whether it's white fans, black fans, Hispanic fans, Chinese fans, Indian fans, whoever. Do you know how many people love them? That's a positive sign, because you're not going to be a racist if you're wearing a Hurt Business T-shirt and you're not black, right? Look at the New Day. Look how many people embrace the New Day. Think they're racist for embracing the New Day? Or do you think that they don't see race because they love the New Day, whether they're white, black, Chinese, Italian, whatever they happen to be? So MVP's ideology is all screwed up. It's all screwed up. And really, I'm getting tired of him taking pot shots at fans over some weird ideology he has that the world's racist, or that, if you're white, you shouldn't cheer for black wrestlers, I guess. I don't know what the hell he's trying to say. But whatever the hell he's trying to say, it's not only disingenuous, it's garbage. And it's hypocrisy at its finest, because if you really felt that way, then you would say, I don't want to just manage African-American wrestlers or teams. I feel like you're lumping me together, and I feel that's a little bit stereotypical and racist, so can I manage some other? You never did that. You never went to the powers that be and said that, so stop yelling at the fans. What a jerk, seriously. Just living proof that you can be really good at being a wrestler and really dumb, because that guy is dumb. Or at least he's brainwashed. He may be book smart, but he's dumb, because he's brainwashed himself into an ideology that makes absolutely no sense. So let me get this straight. If I boo the Hurt Business and I'm white, it's because I'm a racist and I don't want to cheer for black people. If I cheer the Hurt Business, I'm racist because I'm supporting lumping all African Americans together. So what do you want me to do? Basically, no matter what you do, you're wrong. You're a racist, according to MVP. Congratulations. You're a moron. Now, the second moron that's getting way, way more than she deserves is Sasha Banks. I can't believe the amount of people who said, I support Sasha in saying that she wants to keep, 4 or 5 feet distance between her fans when she's taking pictures. You do? Oh, you support that. And you support that. Why? Because it's her right to do whatever. Yeah, it's her right not to do them at all. If she's so concerned, and this is not a medical thing. She's not saying, well, I'm afraid of COVID. Then if you're afraid of COVID, don't do the fucking autograph signing. Don't do the goddamn things if you're that afraid. She's not. I'll tell you what she's afraid of. I don't want them touching me. I don't want them close to me because wrestling fans are dirty, perverted, stalkerish, nasty, dumb, redneck hicks. And I'm a queen. Take your goddamn bullshit and shove it in your ass. If I went to get a picture with you and you told me I had to stand 3 arm lengths away from you because I might be tempted to jump on you because you're so hot, or I might stalk you later, or I might be an unwashed hillbilly, kiss my ass. You're going to take my money, though, aren't you? And I can't believe the amount of fans who are supporting this. It just goes to show you how dumb some fans really are. They don't realize they're being insulted. You don't think that's an insult? You see Sasha Banks doing that when she's meeting her movie people, when she's on The Mandalorian and everybody's hugging her and kissing her, all of her co-stars and everything? Oh, they're not staying an arm's length away. Only you, the lowly wrestling fan, who's beneath her and shouldn't come anywhere near her because you make her skin crawl. But she'll take your money. Done with Sasha Banks. I don't give a damn if I ever see her again. There's something mentally wrong with her. And she hates the very people she's making a living off of. And I've said it for a long time. This isn't the first time I've heard this. This isn't the first time I've heard about Sasha Banks telling kids to get lost, telling other people to get lost. Oh, yeah, once in a while she'll feel benevolent when there's a camera and say, I love my fans. Look, I have this special needs fan, and I'm hugging her. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's for your own publicity, you phony. You want to know who's not a phony? I'll tell you who's not a phony. Eddie Kingston's not a phony. Okay? Eddie Kingston, who goes to an indie card and tells them, don't publicize this, but the pay that you're giving me, just mail that to the Cancer Society. I just did the gig for free. But don't mention it. Well, I mentioned it because it deserves to be mentioned. Those are not the phonies. Those aren't the people who's looking for publicity. You know what Sasha Banks would have done? 10% of my salary is going to go to this fund, and you can buy a T-shirt where 60% is going to me to commemorate how wonderful I am. No, Eddie Kingston didn't do that. Eddie Kingston just showed up and said, you know, please don't publicize it or print it, but take my salary and donate it. And I'm supposed to cheer Sasha Banks? Screw Sasha Banks. Every time I see a picture of her with some smiling fan 5 feet away from her. Oh, you really think some 12-year-old kid's going to jump you? You really think some adult guy right in front of a whole mob of people is going to try to cop a feel? Do you really think you're that special? God have mercy on us all. And for every wrestling fan who gladly handed over that money, you handed your money over to someone who thinks you're beneath them. And you did it with a smile on your face, which means you're encouraging that behavior. And it's disgusting, Mike, and I've had enough of it.
And look, if she's, you know, you mentioned Eddie Kingston, but I'm only going to go back to Ted DiBiase. All right? He, almost with a smile, you've told this story before, almost with a smile on his face, as he's eating a dinner, you know, annoying fans come up and sign this, you know, I want you to sign this T-shirt, whatever, whatever. And he did it all with a smile on his face, right?
Yes.
Well, basically. But And the other guy that was with him said, well, I wouldn't have done that. Well, you're not taking into account who's paying his salary, but that's neither here nor there. The point is Ted DiBiase did what Sasha Banks wouldn't do.
No, that's absolutely correct, and I'll tell you exactly where it was. It was in the Fernwood Resorts in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And I had an exclusive room in the same building as the wrestlers where you had to have a special key card to get in, to the point where the WWE officials came to me, knocked on my door, and said, how did you get this room? And I said, well, I booked it way ahead of time because you're having two nights here. And they said, okay, well, it's only supposed to be for the wrestlers. And I said, well, what would you like me to do? I've paid for this room. I'm not moving. And WWE official said, you don't look like you're going to cause any trouble. It's fine. Don't worry about it. And I stayed right in the same building as all the wrestlers, saw them all in the hallway. And we ate in the same lounge. And that is where Ted DiBiase was literally set upon by two extremely, extremely rude women who not just politely came over and said, I'm sorry, I know you're eating your meal, but could I get a quick autograph? They stayed there for 20 minutes. They sat on his lap. They took pictures. They had conversation. His food was getting cold. And at the end of the day, when the guy sitting next to him said, that was freaking ridiculous, I would have told them to hit the highway, he said, well, you know, they paid for the meal technically. That's an attitude that, you know, listen, I was sitting at the table across, and I was like, I would have told them to get lost too, man. That was my first thought was I would have signed that first autograph and maybe taken that picture. After that, I would have said, excuse me, you know, I'm in the middle of a meal. He didn't do it. He didn't do it. But even that does not rise to the level. Different. If Sasha Banks says, outside the WWE, I really don't want to sign autographs or take pictures, fine. But she's being hired to do this. Some promoter is giving her a bunch of money and telling her to sign the autographs and take the pictures, and she's saying, only at like a couple of arm's lengths away because I don't want any of these gucky, ugly, nasty, pimple-faced fans anywhere near me. And these chuckleheads are saying, here's my $30, Sasha. I'll gladly stand 5 feet away from you, and we'll smile and pretend to be happy. Are you nuts? Why don't you give your money to somebody who's worth it? Why don't you give your money to somebody who's genuinely saying, I'm glad to meet my fans, instead of someone who's basically telling you, you're the unwashed masses, unworthy to get near me? When are wrestling fans going to wake up? These are your heroes? These people should be run out of the business. Completely run out of the business. Because there is no justification. Even if she says, well, I'm germophobic and I'm so worried about COVID that I can't mentally do this, then don't do it. Don't do it. That was always my go-to during the COVID era when people said, oh, my God, you're walking in the store without a mask. Yeah, if you're worried about getting COVID, then you should be. Stay home. Stay home, then. If you're so scared that you have to wear 6 masks and a suit of armor and gloves and galoshes, stay home. I'm not, so I don't have to stay home. You're the one who's panicky. You're the one who's paranoid, so stay home. Well, it's the same way with Sasha Banks. If you're that paranoid, don't do it. Oh, but I want the money. Ah. Well, then why don't you try doing these online meet and greets? That way, at least, it doesn't look like you're such a bitch that you don't want anybody near you. You're just saying, well, you know, it's online. It's easier for me. No, you're actually going to conventions. And the same conventions that people are literally posting pictures of their arm around other wrestlers, there's Sasha Banks 5 feet away. I mean, folks. Stop indulging these people who think they're better than you. Stop it already. God almighty. You can't get any more pretentious than that. Todd, I don't know if you remember, but remember we went to an autograph signing with Sonny? And you were actually getting – I got my picture taken with her, and when you went to get your picture taken with her, she was on the goddamn phone. And the camera guy was kind of waiting, and she wasn't getting off the phone. And I literally had to say, could you get off the phone? I mean, I don't understand these people.
Yeah, I remember that night over at the one school when I got my picture taken with Sonny.
Yeah.
It took her forever to get a picture taken with her and then sign the photo after that and the little poster thingy. What she did that night was very unprofessional.
It was. Listen, she was standing close to you, but she's on the phone. You don't want your picture with Sonny on the phone talking to somebody. That's not what you paid for. That's what I mean. You see, it's just in people. It's just in people's nature. Do you think I would ever do that in 100 million years to somebody? I would be so mortifying, embarrassed if I did that to somebody that I couldn't sleep. Because I'd think basically I was just spitting on somebody. And I don't want them to think that. But these people don't care, Mike. They're just like, oh, give me the money and get the fuck out of my life. And I'm tired of the wrestling fans putting up with it.
Apparently not. And that's the thing. You look at, and I don't know when it changed. You know, I mean, I guess back when we were growing up, they maybe had one or two people that did that. But I don't remember a wholesale amount of people being this ornery, being this, you know, this type of person that they're not gonna do this stuff and not gonna do it the right way. Even for God's sakes, even Dustin Rhodes in that story you tell, you know, put his arm around somebody and did all this stuff, you know. That's the way it should happen, and that's what they don't understand. And by the way, before we end up leaving here tonight, I just found out today that Bobby Fulton of the Fantastics is in a bad way in the hospital. I think he's got pneumonia or something, or double pneumonia or something.
Oh, boy.
And that in the era of COVID, that's dangerous.
It's very dangerous at any age and in any time, so we wish him all the best, obviously. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening, and we'll be back here on Tuesday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.